Welcome to How to Ruin Your Own Reputation, the show where I talk to people who either have unusual jobs or who live lives that some people don't quite understand. My guest today definitely falls into the unique job category. For years, he worked as an intelligence officer with CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. So yes, a spy and a Canadian one at that. Andrew Kirsch is also the author of the best-selling book, which I have right here, I Was Never Here. My true Canadian spy story of copies, codenames, and covert operations in the age of terrorism. Hello, Andrew, and thank you for joining me today.
Hi, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on your show, and podcast.
So I want to say I read your book and I really enjoyed it. And I was telling you earlier that I was afraid it would be a little too technical for me, that I wasn't going to get it. But it was really, really well written in a way. It felt like a conversation. It felt like we were sitting back and you were just telling stories and talking about what your life was like. And I thought that was, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was easy to read and I read it really quickly. So I recommend it highly.
Thank you very much. I think that was one of the, I always tell people it's a quick read. It's an easy read. It's not supposed to be a policy book or a legal book or an instructional book about our national security organization. It's just, I ran away and joined the circus, and this is kind of what happened to me. And most of it's me in bewilderment that I either have to do these things or I have, you know, I get to do these things, and, you know, how that impacts your life inside the spy world and outside as a regular person.
And I got to tell you, I hate to ask you this because I know you're asked this all the time, but I feel like, okay, honestly, I feel like for our non-Canadian listeners, but also, if I'm going to be honest, probably for some of our Canadian listeners, who aren't quite clear on what CSIS is and think it's just like the FBI or the CIA, but it's not quite the same. It's different. Can you explain it?
Absolutely. Well, I explained this for 10 years when I was an intelligence officer knocking doors. I can tell you that most Canadians, the large majority, do not know what CSIS is and what we do. So in Canada, we are the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. And most people say, oh, you're like the CIA. And I said, well, not exactly. So the American, the CIA operate abroad and they collect foreign information for intelligence. And we're a domestic security service. So we operate largely within Canada with a few exceptions and kind of collect threats to our national security. And so, oh, you're like the FBI. Well, I said, no, because the FBI is like the RCMP and they're the ones who bring cases and go to trial. So we're a domestic security service. So doing that kind of spy work, but operating largely with some exceptions in Canada. So I'm, you know, trying to be a covert person, but really knocking on doors 20 minutes from where I live and where I grow up, trying to be this secret squirrel that we're called with no one knowing who we are, what we do and why I'm there and what I'm doing. So that's kind of the fun stuff.
Feels very thankless, actually.
Thankless, although it's interesting. Things since I've left and I wrote the book, and you know, no one knew where I worked, right? That's the other thing, is that we're supposed to be reasonably discreet. So I couldn't tell anybody where I worked, what I did. I would keep that part of my life very, very secret. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote the book and people are like, oh my goodness, you were a spy for 10 years. Like, thank you, you know, say thank you for your service. And I said, well, it feels very weird to hear that, mostly because no one knew where I worked. And yeah, we were just kind of quiet people going about our day.
It's funny because I bet there are people who say, but there's no terrorism in Canada. We're the safe ones. We're the nice ones.
Well, you know, I hear that a lot. And to those folks, I say, well, actually, one stat that I hear or is thrown around saying you're more likely to die being hit by lightning than a terrorist attack in North America. And I say, well, you know, that's because every day thousands of people are waking up and going out in law enforcement, intelligence, security to make sure you don't get hit by lightning. You know, it's not an evidence that we don't need it. It's a little evidence that it works. Now, we can argue about if we have enough, if we need more, if we're doing the right things. But, you know, there are real threats. Canada, I say that the security that we enjoy, which we do, we are a safe country. Mm-hmm. We should be happy about that. It's not guaranteed to continue. And it's not an accident. You know, there are people out there trying to keep us safe.
It's funny. It makes me think of like somebody saying, it's weird, but the jewelry store at the mall never gets broken into. I guess jewelry stores don't get broken into. And it's like, or maybe it has to do with the two armed guards out in the front.
That's right. And the buzzer, you can't get in and all these things. I work in security now, and it's sometimes very hard to say, you know, the cameras you put on your house, they deterred somebody from even trying. But that's the profession I've chosen, and those are the challenges of it.
Now, were you, when you were little, did you watch spy movies and think that's what I want to be when I grow up?
You know, I was one of the large percentage of Canadians that had no idea we had a spy service. I wasn't into it. I was kind of swept up in the times. Like, I'm a post 9/11 spy, and there's a generation of us that ran away and joined the circus. Like, that we were inspired at this point of our lives, and things were happening in the world. And you had 9/11, and I was living in London in 2005, working in finance. And I said, you know, maybe there's something else going on in the world that I want to be a part of. And I talked to colleagues that I kind of joined the same time, and we were all like the same. And they're people in the military, and people found their kind of avenue or how they wanted to get involved. It was, I wanted to serve. I felt very drawn to that. And then I served. You know, I did 10 years, and that's a good career, and you don't have to do it forever.
So what's the first step? What did you do? Okay, you wanted to do it, and then now what?
I wish there was a cool story that I was recruited in a pub or some tapped on the shoulder. But the real sad truth is I Googled, you know, how do I become a spy? And really before that was, does Canada have spies? And how do I become one? And there's, even back then, this is 2005, there was like an online portal to submit a cover letter and a CV and fill an application, hope for a phone call. And you hope that someone calls you and say, you know, months later, is this Andrew? And did you submit an application? And can we talk? I was like, sure, absolutely. It's a long process of recruitment and interviews and role playing and a polygraph exam where I have to get hooked up to the lie detector, which is not fun. I don't know anyone who thinks it's fun, but I can confirm that it's not.
Is it just nerve wracking? Is it just?
Yeah. You know, I've led a pretty sheltered life, and I'm a pleaser, which is actually the worst, because I'm like, there must be something I'm not telling you. If I'm sitting there and this person's like, well, obviously, you know, you've done some bad thing. I'm like, I'm sure I have. I want to tell you what they are.
What, you want to make stuff up. You're just saying,
when I was 10, I did, you know, I did this, and you're just racking your brain. They also try to make that an uncomfortable experience to elicit those types of responses. And they succeeded. They are very good at what they do. It's awkward for everybody.
Everyone has a little bit of secrets, even if they don't. When they're in that situation, they start realizing, oh shit, I don't want anyone to know about that. Yeah.
What do you look at online? I read the news. Stay up to date on current events. They're trying to find out if there are things that you are not comfortable to share or situations you put yourself in that if other people found out, they could, you know, use it against you. And that sucks, right? That just sucks.
Now, while you're going through this, just the training part of it, the 18 months, can you tell people that you're even trying?
You know what? You probably could. The line throughout is always kind of practice discretion. I didn't tell anybody until I got far enough in the process that I thought it might be a reality. Like, I didn't think it would happen. I was, I'll apply. Right. And this will be fun. And one day I'll get a letter, and that letter will say thanks, but no thanks. And I'll pull it out in 20 years and tell my kids, you know, I tried to apply to CSIS and ha ha ha. But then they started asking me for the names and birth dates of everybody, you know, my family, because they're doing the detailed background check. Ooh. At that point I said, well, I should probably tell them, because if there is anything in their background that they might not want the government to find, speak now or forever hold your peace, because they're going to start asking. And they're going to ask me before they ask you.
Well, I thought it was so funny when you talk in your book about dating, like going out on dates. And that's, it's a bit of a bummer that you can't say.
It can be tough.
You have a really cool job. It's got to be really tough to have to tone that down.
It can be extremely frustrating. Because you're trying to make a good impression on a first date. And with the job, it was always, for me, like, you know, say you work for the government and kind of, you know, mumble through something boring to change the subject. I'm like, but I'm cool. Or I'm not as uncool as I'm making myself. And, you know, it sounds silly now. I was 26, a single guy trying to meet people and walking that line. And that was a constant challenge, especially just starting out and dating. What do I say? When do I say it? When's it awkward to say it too early? When is it awkward to say it too late? You've been dating someone for a long time, and is like, what is this happening? What is happening now? I felt that was awkward.
Exactly.
Too.
Well, for sure, because it can look like you're like, what else are you holding back? That's kind of a big thing.
Well, what were you not honest about? Like, when you said you were sick that night, were you sick? Oh. I did have to say I can't hang out, and now you're dating people, you're not going to see them every night. I have an extremely trusting and understanding wife. She knows, at that point, she knew where I worked. I'd say, I'm going out tonight. I can't tell you where I'm going. I can't tell you who I'm going to be with. I can't tell you when I'm going to be home or what I'm doing. And love you and see you soon. You know?
Wow.
It was a lot of trust.
It's funny because as a mother, all of a sudden I'm thinking about your mother, who I'm sure your mother wanted to tell people too doing such a cool thing. I mean,
of course, if I chose this life, I decided I'm going to lie to people, like that's on me. But once I tell my mom or tell my wife, obviously now when people ask them, they have to lie. And I never felt that was very fair. So I was dating this girl that she knew. And then we were like, when do I tell her parents?
Oh, true. Right.
And, you know, at my wedding, there were people there who didn't know what I did. And there was a very weird table, a very diverse table of my colleagues. And everyone looked over and said, who are they? Those are Andrew's coworkers. And what do they do? No one has any idea.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you're very honest about kind of the boring stuff also. And the fact that it's not like, you know, you see in the movie, it's not like you pass the test and then they hand you a tuxedo and a bunch of cool gadgets.
That's right.
And send you on a mission. I mean, you were 2 years? You're in an office? No windows?
I always get people, and here's a warning, anyone buying the book. People buy it and they go, the first couple, the chapters before you got going. And I said, yeah, I didn't think it'd be a very fair description of the life if I said I showed up and I was started, all of a sudden I was knocking on doors and being real, you know, people's vision of what a spy is. I spent 2 years in a windowless office reading reports and writing memos as a policy compliance officer for everyone else who was doing the cool stuff that I had signed up to do. And it was 18 months of recruitment, 6 months of training, 9 months of French language training. And I get my first post and they say, hey, for 2 years, you're going to be here reading memos and writing memos. And the most exciting thing that's going to happen to you is you're going to be on the treadmill in the office gym and someone's going to pull you off the treadmill because they need an urgent memo because someone wanted to get out for a snowstorm on a Friday, right? It was not glamorous, but that's part of the life and part of the disappointment of, you know, not just careful what you signed up for, but what you sign up for has all sorts of parts to it.
That was funny too. No, when you were talking about how one thing that you did have fun with at that time was coming up with code names, that you would come up with code and that you would try and just make each other laugh by like trying to throw in ones that you knew just wouldn't get past.
That's part of the spying, is the obscuring true identities of people and people who work with us. And so we would have code names and people would have to come up with them. Now, either it was a blind finger in a dictionary to see would this work, or we could propose some names. And there were all sorts of rules about, you know, what we could choose, and they couldn't be proper nouns that you would just be very common, and they had to work in generally work in English and French. But we would try to use inside jokes, movie characters, anything that would be fun, but also appropriate, because the big fear was that something would go wrong and you get sent up to the senior levels of government and they'd have this big discussion about what happened with source Snuffleupagus or something like that. And they'd have to have this very serious conversation using a preposterous name. And they just were not going to allow that to happen.
Eventually you did switch to special ops, right? So
yeah.
Now is that's going to be exciting, but it does bring another level of danger, right, to you and to your family. So what's that like?
So yeah, I moved from the desk. I got paroled or released. And then I was a field investigator for a couple of years, knocking on doors and gathering information. So one of the roles is kind of an HQ analyst. The other role is what we call a collector, recruiting human sources, gathering information. And then this other role is our special operations unit. And that is when a subject investigation reaches a threshold investigation where you can use warranted powers. So intercepting phone calls, listening to conversations, and they would have a special team that was specially trained, full of technologists and intelligence officers like myself as a security team to go and do these jobs. Cause you couldn't tell them, you couldn't go to a target and say, hey, the judge says I'm allowed to read your emails, hand them over. Cause that would tell them that we're doing a special operation, that they're warranted, their target. So we would go and devise these plots. And a lot of it was late at night, breaking into offices, homes, trying to be places where we were not supposed to be, where we would not be detected. It's the thing, you know, I was never here is the name of the book because that was our motto. I had a t-shirt and it was don't get caught. So I would say to folks that I wasn't really worried about getting hurt. I was always worried about getting caught. I didn't want to be on the cover of the Globe and Mail. I didn't want a target to know they were being investigated. I didn't want to jeopardize a national security investigation by, you know, being caught in someone's driveway or in a place where I'm not supposed to be. And we're very security conscious and making sure we're not putting ourselves in danger. Mm-hmm. But weird things happen all the time. And if there's one thing I hope I get across is that, you know, no plan ever goes as intended. You know, people ask me, what do the movies get wrong? And I say, if they have a plan that is like three steps and they can get from step one to two without anything going wrong, that is not how it is. Wow. Something always happens between step one, two, the changes, step two, three, four, five, six. These elaborate, you know, this is going to happen, that person's going to happen. Never. I've never in my life. So you're constantly kind of in these late night situations, trying not to get caught. And, you know, was that a noise? Someone there? Our devices working? Did something come up that we were not expecting to find that we have to deal with? Someone break something that we have to fix? Was it broken before we got here? So that's, did we break it or did someone else break it? Let's have a huddle about that. So that was extremely stressful. Speaking of my very understanding, you know, wife. So when I was an investigator, and I would talk to people, and she understood that I talked to people, and I couldn't tell her who. So I'd say, "I'm, you know, honey, I got to work late tonight. I'm having a coffee with somebody at, you know, 7 or 8, and I'll be home at 10." And then I was doing special operations, and that was, "Hey, I'm now working from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m." And she would say, "Who are you meeting at 2 in the morning?" And I said, "Well, now I go places where." I'm not meeting anybody because I'm trying to avoid meeting people. That was a couple of years of my life running around doing that, which was more what people kind of envision of the spying. And it does happen. We do it. But I think in the stories, I try to explain, one, nothing ever goes as planned. And I spent my whole career going, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe we're doing this. Like, is this going to work?"
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Well, it's funny because like you said, in the movies, when you're watching something like a Mission Impossible and it seems like everything is timed out to the like if the target takes an extra haul of their cigarette, the whole thing is shot to hell. But yes. You talk about how when you were training, they even said, "We're not going to throw things at you because life is going to throw things at you that you can't plan." And you talk a funny thing, like when you're talking about how dogs are really unpredictable and how a couple of them.
Oh,
a couple of times they were the reason you're like, "What?" Like,
yeah. Pets, teenagers. If when are they coming home from the bar? Right? Oh, they got a kid. They get some neighbor's 21-year-old college kids coming home from the bar at 2 in the morning, 1 in the morning, going out having a smoke. You know, people walking dogs late. So I showed up in my special. We had special training. I talk about this in the book where you get trained to be a special operations person, and the first day in the course. The instructor, who's the grizzled veteran of hundreds of jobs, says, "You know, we're not in more colorful language than I will say here. You know, we're not going to mess with you. We're not going to lay any tricks or traps." And we're sitting there going, "Huh, you know, sure. Because he's saying when things happen, and they will happen, and we've done enough to know that they will happen, we don't want you to think that it was us, right? We don't want you to think that this is kind of artificial. So we're super skeptical. And I say the first job, first training exercise, we're in a van, we're getting ready to break into a condo. We're in an above ground parking lot behind the building. And there's a small narrow path. And then we're trying to go, you know, team of four are going to go into this building. And one of the guys decides he's not going to walk in the path. He's going to walk 2 feet off the path on the grass. One step out of the van, stepped in a huge pile of dog poo. And you just couldn't have placed it there if you tried. It's not like an instructor was out there with bags going, "I'm going to get these guys." It's just, and so you can't break into a place if you stink.
No, it's hard to be stealth and ninja-like.
They're going to either see you, you're going to see footprints, disgusting right. footprints, but also your apartment's going to smell. Mm-hmm. So we were like, "Well, okay, let's go back in the van and get your shoe off and put that
in the bag."
So the driver of the van doesn't have to sit with your stinky shoe. And the next guy up and away we go. 5 minutes later, did anyone see us? Smell us? do we have to clean the footprint off the path? You huddle up, you have a fun conversation, you make a new plan, and away you go.
And people are unpredictable, because I'm thinking also you could be watching somebody's home for 6 months and they go to bed at 11 o'clock and then one day they fall asleep in the living room.
That's it.
And you're screwed. It's all the time.
Let me ask
you this. So there were also in movies, it seems like there's always like the guy and then there's the people who help the guy. But it was a team. Like I already hear myself saying, like Liam Neeson, when saying there was a team of people with a special set of skills. Yeah.
Yes.
And you all brought something to that, because it's so, and it's funny too, because I have to laugh going back to Codenames. I know there was the guy who was in charge of locks, and he had a very, very creative code name, which was
Locks. We just call him Locks. he's the Locks, and there's going to be a lock. We bring locks. You know, there are guys who, and girls, and women. Like it's funny. I think all my bosses were women, and most of my mentors were women, which I hope it comes across in the book, because I try to obscure who people are. But it's an eclectic group from all over the country of all different backgrounds. I was in finance. I was a teacher. You know, somebody was a lawyer, and we're all working on these cases. And the tech guys who were one's a remote specialist who could hack in anywhere, and the other person is someone who can drywall your wall in 2 seconds without you noticing that there's something behind it. Cool. And locks. And this guy who just all day long, he picks locks, and we bring him along. And if we have to open a door, he opens the door. That's his one job, because you know, I can't do everything. I can do barely anything. So we have the specialists, and my job was kind of oversee to make sure that our operation stayed on time and that we had everything. The specialists got supported. So if they said, I need this tool, I need 20 minutes, I need to know exactly the computer. I need to know exactly the car. I would have to go out and find out, okay, this is the car we're working on. This is the, you know, this is how much time we have, and make the plan. It's kind of fun. And then that leads to the things that I miss. You'll say, what do I miss? I miss sitting in the back of a van with 10 people and just killing time and joking. And I talk about the book. There's one time I remember where someone fell asleep in their living room, and we're all trying to figure out, did they fall asleep? Are they watching a movie? What's the movie? Who's in it? Do we send a surveillance to go peek? Is it a Hallmark movie? Is it John Stamos? It looks like John Stamos. How much longer is this movie? We're trying to find the channel. And it was just the people made it a lot of fun.
It sounds like you need a lot of patience from the beginning, from even when you're starting, to the training, to the first part of your job, to even when you're there and you're on surveillance. Like, it seems like you have to be not only patient, but you have to have pretty good people skills, because I know that there are times when you have to go to us regular people and be like, I need your car, or can we borrow your home? Right.
Yes.
And
that's it. Yes. So that's also, I think, where folks with different backgrounds work well with different people. So there's no one kind of type. I get asked a lot, who makes a great spy, or who is the ideal? And I say, you know, we're all kind of different. I'm a pleaser, and I want everyone to be happy, and I'm not overly direct. And there's some type A's will just say, you give me your keys right now. And people respond differently to that versus me. But you're trying to ask people either very sensitive information, sometimes personal information, about people who are close to them. Can I talk to you about your cousin? Can I talk to you about your neighbor? I'm worried about X, Y, and Z. Can I borrow your car? Can I use your home? And I can't tell you, once again, I can't tell you why. I can't tell you what I'm going to do there. And I'll just give you a call and I can't give you a lot of money, because we're cheap and we don't have a lot of money. But I'll let you know when we're done. And thank you so much. Really appreciate it. That was very good on my thank yous. Experience helps, right? There's certainly the basic questions when you knock on a door. Why are you? Who are you? Who are you really? How do I know you?
No, really.
Yeah. Who are you really? How'd you get my name? What do you want with me? Am I allowed to talk to you? Am I going to get in trouble for talking to you? Like there's kind of the standard questions. And so you start to figure out what your answers are. There's no like a book. It's just, these are how I kind of am able to answer the questions. And you also realize pretty quick that you can't fake authenticity, and that counts for most of it, right? Where you're like, I can't tell you all that, but I can tell you, I really need it. You're helping. Like, I appreciate it. Most folks, in my experience, want to help.
Right.
So if you say you need your help, they want to help. What they want you to do is make it okay to help you. Am I allowed to help you? Am I going to get in trouble for helping you? And so there was that, how do I help this person get to a place where they are able to help me? Making those choices about who you're going to talk to, it's the hardest thing. And back in 2006, 2007, early, I was going to try to pick, okay, who am I going to go talk to? Do they have access to the information I'm interested in? And are they going to help me? Are kind of the two questions. So you'd Google the name and hopefully they showed up in the newspaper and maybe they were a volunteer to their hockey team or something. See, they're a good person and looks like they live two doors away and maybe they know the person. Well, they can see who their Facebook friends are, Twitter, you can see everything they ever said or thought about everything. You get a lot more information to make those initial assessments on, will this person help me and do they have information that I'm interested in?
You mentioned something that's interesting to me that about how you can find out about people now. I would think that now with the explosion of the internet, that as far as terrorism goes and recruitments and that it's got to be way easier for people now, the bad guys, to communicate now. But is it also easier to catch them?
It's a real challenge. I guess it goes both ways. Yeah, I used to say that the loner in their basement, writing their plans on it with a paper and pencil, like good luck finding that person, right? Like good luck to you. And we've had examples of those kind of people who snap and go out. So when they start communicating, there's absolutely opportunities to be alerted. And maybe they say something to the wrong person and that person comes and talks to us, or maybe it gets picked up somewhere and other people start talking, right? That same kind of thing. I would tell people where I worked and I trusted that person not to tell other people.
Right.
I would tell somebody their plan and now they're trusting someone to not tell anybody else their plan. So that it's a cat and mouse, but it is. And this day and age with encryption and these apps and how you can communicate. And I don't want to give anybody any tips, but that's the cat and mouse game. So how are they kind of communicating and in a way that connects other people and makes it more problematic, supported overseas funding and those types of things. And, how are we able to get access to that information without them knowing about it? I think about how quickly and how much has changed since I was there.
I bet. Constantly. Yeah.
Well, I talk about the book. Like, I broke into cars in people's driveways. And nowadays, I mean, how many Ring doorbell cameras are in any neighborhood? I don't know if you can do that anymore. But it's with the technology now, it is challenges and opportunities, I guess. Challenges and opportunities.
Mm-hmm, right. So we talked earlier about how people don't see Canada as having this huge threat for terrorism. But one thing that I don't think people realize, and I realized more when I was reading your book and also doing research after, is that another thing that I think you guys do is that you also are on the lookout for sort of homegrown terrorists. Because like it or not, we have people here that have gone outside of the country and committed horrible acts of terrorism. And I don't think we see ourselves that way, that people have been indoctrinated. So I think part of it is to stop them here before they can get there.
Well, that's when I was there, that was a big challenge. And I think Canadians have, maybe everybody, but we kind of have this narrow, we have maybe a narrow definition of threats to ourselves is what's going to go boom in our backyard. That's what I'm worried about, right? That's, and the reason a lot of us were inspired by 9/11 in 2005 is because bombs were going off in places where we lived. And we said, something happened in New York, something happened in London. I don't want to happen in Toronto. And that was the threat. And around 2010, 11, kind of Iraq, Syria start falling apart, with ISIS. And we have a thing called foreign fighters. And there were Canadians who were radicalized and inspired to go overseas and fight. And the concern was, we can't have Canadians, murdering people and blowing things up overseas. And we also don't want them to go get training and hardened and build networks and come back. So we have to be very concerned about that. The Parliament Hill shooter, he was a frustrated traveler. They thought he was trying to go overseas. I list a bunch of examples of people in the book who went overseas and it caused real carnage. So that was a big concern. And now we have right wing extremism. We have, I think now it's ideologically motivated violent extremism of all sorts.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It is, there's people out there. So yeah, not to. That kept me busy. It kept me busy for many years, and it's keeping people busy now.
And I guess that, again, the sign that you guys are doing a good job is that we didn't feel it. We didn't know it. We didn't see it. Now we are seeing more of sort of the threats, but it is, listen, I'm glad you're here, and it's good. And I think it is important for people to understand more about what's happening in our own country.
Well, so this is, one of the reasons I wrote the book, I went and knocked on doors, and I'd say, I don't know, 98%, 99%, 100%. People had no idea what CSIS was and what we were interested in, a loose understanding of what the threats were. Now I'm asking people for help, right? So you can imagine I knock on a door and I say, my name is Andrew. I'm here from the Canadian Security Intelligence Service and I need your help, right? And what, who, where are you from? What's the problem? So one of the reasons I wrote the book is that I hope maybe next time one of my colleagues goes in and knocks on a door and says, I'm here from CSIS, I need your help. They said, oh yeah, you guys investigate threats to security of Canada, terrorism, espionage for foreign influenced activities. It's important that we know more about it, that we're there to help. Because the other thing is too, we're Canadians, we think everything's okay. This is all people to call if you do think something's a problem. We have a habit here where everyone's like, oh, someone's looking out for that, right? Like someone's taking care of that.
Someone's got it, yeah.
If it was a problem, someone would tell me. But those people are also asking for help. And if they're saying there's a problem, we should all be on the lookout.
Right.
If we say, hey, this is something we're worried about, keep your eyes open. Yeah, keep your eyes open. Help us out.
You mentioned this briefly, but I want to go back. You said, so you named your book, I Was Never Here, and you had a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And you wore that. Did you wear that every time you went out?
Yeah. It was a bit of a giveaway for my wife. When you're going to work tonight. I found this t-shirt, and it was right as I was going to join the special operations team. And it was this gray Winners. I was at Winners, and I was never here. And I thought, what a fun kind of motto and mantra. And when we went out on the special operations. So as you said, there's a lot of planning that goes into it, and we would do a lot of reconnaissance, and we'd be in the neighborhoods, and we say, when does the teenager come home? When does the guy go walk his dog? When do the lights go off across the street? And then we do a bunch of planning about that. And then the night of the job, I would put on my I Was Never Here t-shirt. It was like, it's game time. And let's do it. It became my lucky shirt. Now I was underneath a sweatshirt, and I wasn't wearing that out for everyone to see. Right. It was still,
I made some pretty shitty spy work.
That's Andrew. Right. I was like, what's that guy doing? Wearing that. That's a weird t-shirt, but it was my kind of, just mentally, I put that shirt on going out to work. I was never here. Bring everyone home safely. That was the, a bit of a cue for me. So yeah, it was fun.
Funny. So I also think that going back to the whole unpredictable, can't plan things, you talked about times when you would be in a social situation where you're you, and then somebody would say something like, oh, I'm going to be at the airport at 5. Yeah. And you're like, oh God, I'm going to be at the airport. And then you have to decide, what are you going to do? Because if they see you and you're not, you don't want anyone coming up to you like, hey, Andrew, let's go.
Yeah. Well, and the airport was one where I was at a brunch and a friend said, oh yeah, I'm flying out today. And they live in Toronto. Oh dear. Cause I was going to be at the airport, and it would be weird if they mentioned that. I didn't say I was going to the airport. I wasn't traveling anywhere, and they saw me and they walked, they would definitely, what are you doing here? So I kind of had to pull them aside, and I kind of did a little bit of a calculus and said, what are the odds they're going to see me at the airport? If they do, but I just felt better to deal with that now. Because there'd be one more thing to worry about.
Right.
So I said, I pulled them aside and I said, hey, I'm going to be at the airport tonight, and I work for CSIS, and I'll be working there. And if you see me, you please, just don't, you can't come up and talk to me. And then they said, what's wrong with my plane? Like, what are you talking about right now? Is there someone on my plane? Like, I just ruined this person's trip. Obviously, that just could not relax. I was like, no, your plane's fine.
But don't tell anyone. Like,
no, at least like, but don't tell about it. And they were just, head in a swivel. Couldn't. It was a long going to Europe flight, and they just ruined their day. What happens is you get really drawn and sucked into your I guess, fake life, my work life, because they're the people I could be most open with and honest with and talk about work and not feel like I was relying. And that's including sources that I met with. Who knew? Like I could actually talk about life and nervous what we were working on. You become very close to people and I'd be scared of my friends, of running into friends' places. And I was nervous about going out to a bar and seeing people I hadn't seen and them asking me what I'm up to. And then I'm going to have to lie to them and feel like a jerk for lying to these people or keep straight what I told them 6 months ago when I saw them. Looking back, I should have been more open with my friends. And I'm telling complete strangers I work at CSIS and asking them for information. Why couldn't I tell, you know, my neighbor? But it is just constantly doing that calculus and stressing out about it. Especially because you're working where you live. You're not overseas.
Yeah.
You're
here. Right. Oh my God. So you could be at the grocery store as one person and then you're knocking on someone else's door as somebody else. And right. It's like, how do you keep your lives from
I'd be out knocking on a door, complete stranger, trying to build an instant relationship of trust and rapport with this person saying, I'm Andrew from CSIS. This is my faith. This is my badge. These are the things that I'm interested in talking to you about. You know, can we go grab a coffee? And that night go on a date and lie to that person about where I work, what I do, you know, what I did that day, who I saw, and everything. You know, it was.
Yeah, that's so crazy. Yeah.
It always felt very strange. And it was. And it absolutely was.
Nice. So let me ask you this. So you were the first that worked for CSIS that ever wrote a memoir, correct? And what compelled you to do that? Was it that you wanted to just say, was it more of a personal, like, okay, this is who I am and I want to share it? Is it more like, this is what CSIS is? Is it a combination?
I think it was a combination. It was very cathartic to kind of write my story. Originally, it was for myself. I want to make sense of this life that I've left, the things I liked about it, the things I didn't, as I think about what my next kind of life is and career is, I want to make sense of this experience a little bit for myself. Mm-hmm. And then as I got into it, I thought, well, maybe this will be interesting for people. But also when I Googled, how do I become a Canadian spy, you know, back in the day, there was no information about it. There was a government website that had a very vague job description. And that was it. And I would read books about CIA agents or Mossad agents and I had to read about other government agencies. And I thought, well, maybe we can have a book too. You know, maybe we can have a book. And if I do it a certain way, you know, maybe that'll be okay. And for the next group of people who walk into training, we'll have a better idea of what they're getting themselves into. And not in this person's a target and this person's this. And I think we talked about too, not a policy book, like this is CSIS's mandate. And this is the law that we follow, but more, you're going to struggle with what are you going to tell people? You know, you can figure out in advance or maybe have a better understanding in advance because there's no answers are coming or you're always going to be faced with this. And maybe the next group will be better prepared. So that's who reached out to me. I get a lot of connection requests from young people who are thinking about applying. I'm interested in the career there. What was it like? Can I talk to you about it? That's fun for me. I'm happy to provide a little bit more of that advice to the folks because it would have made me a better intelligence officer. And there was nothing out there. But yeah, who am I to write the book? I don't know. Why did anyone else? I don't know. I think about that all the time.
Did you have to get okayed? Did you have to pass it through people? I mean, I wrote a memoir. I had to go through a lawyer to make sure it was okay.
Well, that was... That was the real challenging part because there hadn't been one done before. No one quite knew what we were doing. It was very open to work collaboratively with that, you know, with them, and they weren't quite sure, you know, what to do with me and how we were going to do that. And when we kind of bumbled through a little bit, and I don't want to talk too much about it, but because I'm not in jail, and I don't want to go to jail. And I think they were nervous about setting precedents and what was okay and what wasn't. Yeah, that was a huge, and I was stressed out about it. I mean, I was super stressed out. You read a book. Who's going to read this? Who am I to write it? What are people going to think? No one's going to read it. They're going to whatever. And on top of that, and I'm going to jail. And all that, and I'm going to jail, and I'm going to get in so much trouble, and no one's going to talk to me ever again. And all of my former colleagues are going to hate me because no one's ever written a book. And just, if I didn't enjoy writing it, I would have done it.
So here's the thing. So when you decide to leave, what do you put on your resume? What do you say? This is what I've been doing for the last 10 years. I was a spy. Like, really?
Yeah. Well, and also, you can imagine, what about looking for jobs while you're a spy? And we put a CV out while you're there. And I got very, I got a little comfortable with that. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to leave and then I'm going to figure it out. I think most people have this question when they leave or want to change careers, change roles. Like, what's the transferable? What's the skill? I say, I used to talk to people and have them give me sensitive information.
I can break into your home without you knowing.
Well, the special operations is great because I say I used to break into places and now I can help people out.
Right.
So that is, I was like, okay, that is what I do. And also I used to exploit vulnerabilities. Either your online profile has created an opening for me to, schmooze you, or in your home or your office, I know, how to get access through exploiting vulnerabilities. And now we can help you, patch those up. This is how I would target you. So let's rewind and figure out how we're going to keep you safe.
So what do you do now?
So now I'm a security consultant. I set up my shop and that's this kind of stuff that I do. We do security audits and assessments. We do sweeps. So I used to install bugs. And now we go and find them for financial institutions and large companies with annual general meetings and want to make sure the integrity of their meetings are private and secret, and do some investigations as well, where people are getting access to, they want to find someone or get access to business intelligence and things like that. But mostly I like the security audits. It's, as I said, I broke into places. I will tell you where you're vulnerable. We will make recommendations to, protect yourself, people like me, and we'll make sure you're a little, a little more secure. And I didn't grow up dreaming of being a spy. I was very much a believer in public service. And so I still get to do some service with helping people safe. And mostly I get phone calls from folks who have a problem or have a security challenge. And I could say, don't worry, we'll be okay. Let's talk us out.
You're still protective, right? It's still a whole protection theme. And it's so cool, but now you can tell people.
So much easier. I have a link. My wife's like, I've never seen someone so excited about getting a LinkedIn profile. I was like, but I just lost touch with everybody, right? Like, I have no idea where anybody is, because if I reach out to them, they're going to ask me what I do. And I don't want to have that conversation. So now I'm like, hey, how you doing? Oh, I went to my reunion, high school reunion. I go and see people.
It's funny because you're saying that. And I'm thinking, I think that's also part of the reason why I wrote my book, is that when you have to keep secrets for so long, you get to a point where you're like, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. And then you do it in a big way. I'm just getting this funny image of you still being in the biz and your kids being like, oh, it's career day. And, you got to take dad. Just then you're like, I can't. It's like, what profession do I get to pretend that I'm part of? Like, that's, but now you were saying originally that you thought you wouldn't get in. So you thought it would be a cool story to tell your kids someday of like, I was going to, but now it's even cooler because you did.
I got, they're very into it. We do spy lessons at home where I set traps around the house. I say, hey guys, if we go away on vacation, I got all the toys that make noise and we put those by the window. And if you're going to break into my house, you're going to feel it. It is not going to be a fun experience for you. And we do all that. We do spy training for like a 5 and 7 year old. We home alone. We home alone the house.
I was just going to say
it is absolutely, that is absolutely what we do. I think I wrote in the book, but when a lot of kids find out their parents are spies is on career day. It's like grade 9, take your kid to work day and they show up.
That's it.
And they're like, oh, this is interesting. today, Locks is going to teach all the kids how to pick a lock.
Oh, how fun would that be?
And
nobody
there was
at school that day.
Oh, there was a kid who showed up. He picked about, I want to say, all 4 of these locks in about 9 seconds. And we were just
I thought you were kidding. Like, seriously?
No. So, I think I wrote this book. So I can sell it.
I don't remember.
Locks used to, he practices picking locks, right? He has all these kind of tools and he's got these fake locks and he picks these locks and he lets you practice. So he's got this board of like deadbolts, and he has his tools and he gives them to you. He says, this is kind of stuff you're trying to do. You're trying to listen for this, like going on YouTube. I mean, you can do it on YouTube. If you go on YouTube and watch, you know, lock picking videos, and they'll show you to do the stuff. I don't want, once again, I'm not giving anybody any tips, but so locks do this. And when I was there, he put on a little, he's like, okay, kids, you know, these grade 9 kids. And he has a little kit and he said, anyone want to try picking a lock? And this one kid was like, boop, 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 boop. Like, what just happened? And of course he looked at his parent and went, you're in trouble. You're in so much trouble.
You got to get that kid. Yeah. You got to get him.
It is a ninja. It's a ninja spy. Yeah. No, it was.
If he zigs or he zags, like that's going to determine the rest of it.
And it was the rest of his life. I've never done this before. Big, 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 big. It was awesome. The word got out. The word got out at work. And I think Locke's a little nervous, but we were like, did you hear so-and-so's kid just destroyed? Like, it was a big funny thing. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Okay. Before I let you go, I want you to tell everyone where they can get your book.
Yeah, I was there. Thanks so much for having me. I was never here. My true Canadian spy story of Coffee's code names, covert operations. Wherever you buy your books, Amazon, Indigo, online, my website, you can go, andrewkirsch.ca or iwasneverhere.ca. I say also kirschgroup.ca is my company. Mm-hmm. All very easy to remember because it's all my name. But wherever you buy your book, a couple days before Christmas. I don't know when this is coming out, but great present for kids who are interested. I get a lot of, you know, I'll get contacted by a kid, say my mom got me this book, or people always knew I was into spying and they thought this was fun. And then they reach out to me on LinkedIn and I say, hey, sure. Pick it up. It's a lot of fun. Easy read. You'll be through in a couple days.
Absolutely.
It's not a slog. Get back to that. Thanks. It's really appreciate coming on and chatting about it.
Well, we're going to have all that in the show notes. But like I said, I read it and it really was an easy read and a fun read. Yeah. And I loved chatting with you. I came into it knowing nothing. And
that's right.
I learned so much and I really appreciate that. And I loved chatting with you. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today and risking ruining your own reputation.
That's right. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next week.